Hello, and welcome to Shush. My guest on this ninth episode is Cassandra Gorton. Cassandra is my second guest from outside of Queensland, and my first from Victoria. In Australia, public health systems, where most hospital libraries reside, are largely run by state governments, so the colleagues we become most familiar with tend to be those within our states. I can assure listeners this is the only reason for the existing Queensland bias, which I'm sure will lessen over time, even if people do say that a balanced Queenslander is one with a chip on both shoulders. Cassandra works for Monash Health in Victoria, so it was fascinating to compare similarities and differences between our health services. Cassandra has also come on board as Associate Editor of the Journal of Health Information and Libraries Australasia, colloquially known as JHILA. So together we'll be trying to grow and improve the journal as an organ of quality scholarly communication about health library practice in this region. My thanks to Cassandra for a great chat, and as always to Health Libraries Australia for supporting this podcast, and to Ethelred for the musical bridge. I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Welcome to the next issue of Shush, a podcast about health libraries, and my guest today is Cassandra Gorton from Monash Health. How are you, Cassandra?
Good, thanks. How are you, Daniel?
I'm well, thank you. So how did you end up working in health libraries?
I sort of dipped my toe in and out of working in health and around health before I finally settled in this role. I did my placement when I was studying my master's in a hospital library in Sale, so that's in rural Victoria, with the excellent Helen Reed. And I chose a hospital library because, you know, I knew a public library. We've all been to a public library. I knew what a school library was. I knew what a university library was. But I had no idea about health libraries, and I had just seen it on a list of all the available libraries in my area. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to try that out. That's going to be different. I'm going to get a new experience, learn something new. But then I found it really hard to actually get work just in libraries in general. I think the public libraries wanted you to have experience in a public library, or you would not even get an interview. Even in when I was living rurally and the local council had a job coming up for a librarian, and I knew, I think I'm the only qualified person in this town, but I didn't even get an interview. Yeah, it ended up going to someone's mum who worked at the council.
Of course it did.
Yeah. So So I worked doing a lot of records work for government, for schools, some archives work as well. And then
was that with your library quals, or did you have to do separate sort of?
Yeah, so it was with my library qualifications. I did the Charles Sturt Masters in Info Studies, so I got the archives and the records management as well. And then I was able to, yeah, get some work doing that.
And then where did the sort of health library roles come about?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to get a job at ANSCA, the College of Anaesthetists, doing records and archives work there. And I was working there for maybe about a year. And then in the library department, one of their staff members went on maternity leave. So I was able to take on that role because I was already in the organisation. I had the qualifications. Yeah. And then I was able to learn a bit more about what actually happens within a health library, even though, again, it's a really different environment, a medical college library compared to a hospital library, which is where I am now at Monash Health.
Yeah, so do you care to break open some of those differences? Or talk about Monash Health first and then maybe compare it to ANSCA.
Yeah, so at Monash Health, we're in southeastern Melbourne. We're about half an hour, 40 minutes from the CBD, depending on traffic.
The Dan Andrews rail loop will fix all that, won't it?
Yeah, hopefully. So we have four library locations. Clayton is our main one. We also have Dandenong, Moorabbin, and Casey. And we have about a staff of 18,000. It's a really large hospital network. Yeah, I was asked yesterday, how many staff do we have? And I thought 8,000. And then, no, I looked it up. It's 18,000.
So is that across public and private sort of facilities?
Or? So it's all public.
All public, wow.
Yeah.
And so they're all hospitals too?
So those four locations are all hospitals. Yeah. And we do have two smaller sort of community centres. Yeah, and I've moved to Clayton recently so I can be really close to work. It's now a 5-minute walk into work.
Oh, man.
That's the dream. Which is amazing. Melbourne, isn't it? Yeah, it is. So, yeah, now the rail loop is being built at the moment. So,
yeah,
the streets are a bit shut down in Clayton.
So is it a classic hospital library? You serve the clinicians, and do you have sort of university student affiliations and things like that there as well?
Yeah, so we serve the clinicians, and we do have a sort of partnership with Monash University. Monash University is really closely located to where we are. And so a lot of the health students will be doing their placements and they'll come in here too. There's also going to be a new hospital built. That's a Monash University, Monash Health Partnership, the new Victorian Heart Hospital. That's opening up next year, I think.
Wow. And library services are kind of integrated into that? Or?
So, yeah, people will be getting a huge influx of more patrons coming over here to use our resources.
Right. So there won't be a library as part of that Heart Hospital?
No. Yeah. No conversations about that at the moment. That'd be great if there was.
Yeah.
And then increase the budget. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. The real estate's always pretty precious, isn't it?
It's
hard sometimes. And so how did that compare to the ANSCA library?
So because the ANSCA library, it served Australia and New Zealand, but there was only one library location. So, of course, the focus was on electronic materials. But we would still send print books out to people across the country. And I was working at ANSCA during 2020, so the height of COVID. And we'd have a big process around making sure the books we get back are all disinfected and they're put away, so we send them out again. But also there was no real patron interaction as well, because no one would come in to see you in the library. They wouldn't pop by to have a chat or anything like that. So it's really interesting working at Monash Health now. I'll be rostered on the front desk every now and again, you know, greeting the patrons as they come in, helping them check out their books.
And so you get quite a bit of in-library staff? And
yeah, we do. So there is a bit of difference across our locations. So the one at Clayton, that's our main location, and that is where a lot of the staff of Monash Health are located. So that is where we will get more people coming into Clayton every day. So we'll make sure Clayton's always open 9 to 5. There's always someone staffed there to greet people as they come in, to help them borrow books. Our other locations are a bit quieter.
And do you have after hours access as well?
We do. So we have 24 hours access. If you have a staff card, you can swipe in to access the location.
Yeah.
We've been having an issue lately. So we had two self-checkout machines, and they're so old. They're incredibly old. And they were using Internet Explorer, and the software for the self-checkout stopped communicating with Internet Explorer when Explorer was decommissioned. So users couldn't self-checkout books anymore, and we'd been going backwards and forwards with the vendor, not really coming up with a solution that would be cost-effective for us,
yep,
but also allow the patrons to start borrowing print books again. So eventually we've come up with just a LibWizard form and a QR code people can scan at the counter if they want to borrow a book. Quickly scan the code, put in your barcode, send it off to us, and we'll put it in the system. So it's not you know, it's not a fancy high-tech solution, but it works. And it doesn't cost us anything.
One step up from a printed form and a pen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're not doing thousands of checkouts a day, are you, or anything like that? So
no.
I think those solutions are entirely feasible for the context.
Yeah, exactly. So when we did get the vendor out to have a look at the machine, they started trying to upsell us to RFID. I was like, no, it's going to be crazy expensive. If we don't get that many print borrowers, you know, that's not going to work.
And do you feel like some of your collection does go wandering, or it's not too bad?
So we've started doing an inventory across our locations, and I believe it's the first time it's ever been done.
Yep.
One of our locations, we had about 800 books, only 10% was missing. Yep. Well, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. And some of that can be just hadn't been checked, like discarded but not removed from the catalogue. Or
exactly.
Doesn't mean that they've all been, you know, flogged or not returned or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's your specific role within the library? So you mentioned you do some front desk work, but I imagine it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, so my role is the manager for access and discovery. So my main role is making sure all of our technology is working. If something's broken, I'm the one that has to try and fix it. So usually that's, you know, liaising with our vendors and our IT support. It's also making sure all of our systems talk to each other, that the user has the best experience they can get to try to access everything. It is a lot of IT work, but yeah, like I was saying, I do get out on the front desk.
Yep.
And it is collection work as well that's involved.
So that's largely, again, electronic resources within books, journals, point of care tools, discovery layers, that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we recently did, for Library and Information Week, we had a little display, guess how many print books we have in our collection. You can win a little prize. And we found out we've got 8,000 books, but that's only 2% of what we have overall with all of our electronic resources.
Yeah, wow.
Yep.
And do you feel like there's a strong preference either way for print versus electronic?
I think people who have a preference will tell you, and it's usually print. But if they don't have a preference, they'll just access it online, and you'll see that in the stats.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because we'll often have people come up and ask for a book, and we'll say, look, we have it available as an ebook, and they don't want that. They want it as a print book.
Yeah, and I think that's still an entirely legitimate, you know,
absolutely,
format for people, and it's not a question of either or generally, but both and, depending, as you say, on if it's a strongly stated preference, then we try and match that and meet that. And
yeah, I think especially for study texts as well, or core texts, people tend to want those as a print book.
Yeah. Mm. Something about learning anatomy on a page where you can
exactly, you
know, mentally trace things and see things. And
yeah, it's like we have all of the electronic resources where you can go in and have a look virtually at the anatomy and everything like that, but it's still not the same. It's not there yet.
Yes, definitely. Now we have much the same experience as well. So would you say that the library is well supported, well resourced? And talk about the volume of electronic resources that you have. So do you often have to fight to get funding for those?
I feel like we're really well positioned. Our director, Alice Anderson, is incredible, but also her manager, Christine Johnson, is, although she's a clinician and she has a PhD, she's a double doctor, but she really understands the role of a library and its importance and what a library can do. So she'll often fight for us as well.
Yeah, that's gold if you can get non-library buy-in.
Yeah, exactly. I found at some of my previous organisations that if you have a manager that doesn't really get what a library is, you're not really going to go too far. you're going to spend a lot of your time just trying to advocate that you deserve to exist before you even get to getting additional resources.
Can be pretty dispiriting, can't it?
Yeah. So I'm really happy and glad to be working at Monash Health because I don't find that to be the case.
And so do you, in that role, as you said, a lot of it is trying to keep things ticking over and I guess sorting out authentication and all those sorts of things. But do you have capacity to bring new resources, new packages to the table and say, hey, this could be useful or set up trials, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I do when we do look at subscriptions is I'll get a title list of the prospective package, see what it has, see what we have, and line it up. And we recently did that with a package. Someone had reached out to us, a vendor had reached out to us and said, hey, a lot of other hospital libraries have this because of its Indigenous health content. Are you interested? But I looked at it closer and its Indigenous health content was actually freely available. Mm-hmm. It was all from the Lewitcha Institute. So instead, what we did was we made our own collection in our LMS and linked back to the Lewitcha Institute so that people could search in our catalogue and find that information. So I think it took about a day all up, but that's a day of our time instead of spending who knows what on an entirely new package that doesn't suit.
And I think that's one of the great advantages of having a proper clinical library as opposed to just a suite of electronic resources that kind of get plugged in, that you can actually make those decisions and find workarounds that suit better or are much more cost effective.
Exactly. It's, it's well managed. I previously worked in higher ed in some libraries, but they were private higher ed, so it was all about the cost.
Yeah, right.
And so it's a requirement of TEXA that you have to have a library if you want to run a higher education course. But they don't really say it should have a librarian managing it. So a lot of managers think, oh, we'll just sign up for a package or whatever, and that's a library.
You've probably seen, I think, the librarian in the US who must post a bit or something, but she has a in her signature block, it says, and it might be quoted from someone else too, but it says, a library without a librarian is simply a room full of books.
Yeah.
And it rings true. It's a bit of a cliche, but it definitely does. And I think in the long run, apart from all the skills you can bring to upskilling people and helping people use the tools better, but actually, spending the right money in the right places and on the right things and then getting full value for what you do spend money on.
Exactly.
Yeah, returns the value, surely, of whatever the wage of the librarian is and those skills. And I despair too that you see that the same process happening with even schools a lot nowadays and primary schools. And, I think the school library workforce is pretty heavily decimated, and yet surely information literacy and digital navigation skills and all of that are such great importance.
More than ever. Age. This is why, we have these sort of conversations, and I'm really, hesitant about the ALIA Professional Pathways program that's being proposed. Is this just going to further devalue our profession in the eyes of other businesses?
Yeah, I think it's a very live question and one that many of our colleagues have, and because you've seen it happen, as you say. Have a lived experience, and apart from the profession, I think it impacts on uses of information, clearly can benefit from having, structured guidance and here, this is the thing you need, not these other things. And
absolutely.
But I guess you can lament all days, can't you, about some things, but it is a, if not quite existential question, it's definitely, I think, one that needs grappling with and not just an industrial level, but actually on a how people use information for their good or for their ill.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as well, so few people know what it is that a librarian actually does. There's so yes. many people who still have this outdated notion that we just put books on a shelf and then...
or give romance novels to patients or something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been telling people, oh, I'm a health librarian, I work in a hospital, and they'd never, ever heard of that. Or they'll ask questions like, oh, so do you just do inventory all day? I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess, you know, as long as the people who do use us know what we're for, yeah. And you know, I know you always meet lots of people who've been working in hospital for 10 years and didn't know there was a library until they needed it. But
yes.
As long as when they do, they're able to make contact and get a good experience, I think.
Yeah.
We can roll with all the others who don't know what we do, so.
That's true.
So you mentioned before that your boss's boss is supportive. So how... Mm. How does the library kind of sit organisationally?
So we're in the medical, in doctors' education. That's our department. And I think that really fits well. I would like there to be some more connections between us and the other departments within our unit. I think there's also patient educations there too, patient experience. And as well as just getting out there more to the junior doctors and research. So there's more connections that could be made, and we are making them. It can be slow work, I think.
Yeah.
Especially now with there's a lot of people just not available with COVID, with staffing crises. They just don't have the capacity for us right now, but that's okay. Yeah. We can get to it later.
Yeah. I think too, also, even before COVID, or outside of COVID, the health workforce just is so dynamic and turns over so quickly anyway. And so, you know, junior doctors are there for a year and move on. The registrar's there for a year, 6 months, move on. And as you say, you know, we've got 18,000 staff, and even if 10% of them are changing over, maybe more, it's an enormous challenge to maintain, you know, awareness of services and form meaningful linkages that, you know, people using the library. I used to despair more about that, but now I understand how much turnover there is and all that, that actually the regulars that you do have are kind of gold, and, you know, that's a win, and you take that win, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you can make inroads with just one person in a particular department, then it can really spread to the rest of the department, I think. Only this week we got onto someone from nursing informatics, and like, yep. Oh, that's excellent. We can, they can be our little, you know, little warrior on behalf of the library in their department for us now.
Yeah, no, I definitely have similar experiences. So do you have a sense of who your typical library users are?
So we do get a lot of students. We get a lot of nurses as well, but I think the people who use it the most are the pharmacists.
Really?
Yeah. So I was going through our library newsletter yesterday and who had signed up for it. And, you know, 75% of them were pharmacists. Wow. It's fascinating.
And so are they involved in research or more just, you know, the pharmacology information from MIMS and those sorts of things that you provide?
Yeah, I think that's it. They're after the information. We did have, so we use Clinicians Health Channel down here in Victoria. That's our public health network for resources. And I think it was Lexicomp was down for 3 minutes, and we got a call almost immediately from one of the pharmacists.
Wow.
But it was fantastic, because we want people to be telling us when there's an issue. We want them to be looking at it and accessing it.
When people, you know, it's a good thing that we have all these remote tools, but it also makes it difficult to get a sense of who and how often people are using some of those things. So, yeah.
Exactly. I think, too, it's hard when something is broken here. If someone comes across that blockage, they'll just move on. They won't necessarily tell you something's broken.
Yeah, it's really difficult to kind of... navigate those sorts of things, isn't it? Like, you can't be everywhere aware of how everybody's kind of using, you know, all the tools that you have. And I often think about that. We had similar experience with UpToDate, and you sort of your subscription was reviewed and not renewed, but ended up being for a short time because of it was such a strong demand for it. And when you, like, you know, you have 1,000 people a week using it, but when you get pretty much all the senior clinicians across all the main departments kind of ringing and saying, hey, why can't I access this anymore? It kind of reaffirms on actually, you know, these things are important. These things are used daily. You do need to, you know, keep investing in these things. They might be expensive, but they actually make a difference to the way doctors work, etc. So,
absolutely. And isn't that the most important thing we're doing, making sure they can care for patients?
Exactly right. Yeah. And I think that always needs to be in the mix, is that you know, at the end of the day, what we do should be measured in terms of patient care and and not just, you know, clicks on a link or something like that.
Exactly.
So do you get, I know we talked a bit more about that idea between sort of print and electronic resources, but even more broadly, do you sort of get the sense that you do have a literate workforce, or do you still get people coming in saying, I googled this and I can't find the answer?
So we'll get questions like that. We'll also get people who come into the library and be like, oh, is that it? Just looking at the print collection. We'll have to tell them, no, we've got, this is only just a small, small fraction of what we have. We have so many more thousands of things that can help you. And we will get the odd request, oh, I googled this article, can you get it for me, without them, you know, checking our catalogue first.
Yeah. So your own catalogue is kind of where you funnel access to articles as well? And
we also use LibKey. Yeah, I think that's my favourite thing. Just if it's available, I'll Google it. And if it comes up, we have it. We'll have it.
Are you involved with a lot of like literature searching? And
yeah, so that's a new thing that I'd never done before I started at Monash Health. I hadn't been involved in literature searching at all. I knew sort of some basic concepts around it. I knew what mesh was. I hadn't really done anything with that.
Yeah. So at ANSCA, that just wasn't part of your...
No, it wasn't particular... part of my role at ANSCA, no. But here... we started off doing group searches. So we'd have a question, someone would get a question, research question, and one of our team would take Medline, someone else would take ProQuest, et cetera, et cetera. And then I sort of started with the easier databases and then worked my way up to searching something like Medline. I also recently went to the Australian Evidence-Based Practice Institute for a week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I found that really helpful.
In what ways? Just to get a sense of how it all fits into?
Yeah, so to understand in the first place what evidence practice is. Also learned a lot about study designs, different types of study designs, what type of question they best suit, learning about searching and PICO. I think it was great to hear from other health librarians as well, because it was with a lot of other people, but not just hospital, but health librarians in universities as well, and how they might do something different.
And do you get a lot of uni students? Are there levels of support you're kind of able to provide them? I guess it's sort of always that grey area, isn't it? They're in front of you and need help, but they also, you aren't there. Primary sort of responsibility in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been having a lot of conversations about that, because we might get a request from someone, hey, I want you to do a literature search for me, here's my topic. And it's not unless we query them a bit further that we find out this is actually for their assignment.
Yeah.
It's at that point we'll sort of push them back to the university. And we also recommend in the first instance that they should attend one of our webinars. I was going to say, we have an excellent clinical librarian, Karen, here, who runs monthly webinars on literature searching, introduction to the library, how to use different databases, referencing, all that sort of thing. And in the first instance, we will push them to go there.
Yep. And are they well attended?
I think it depends on the time of the year.
Right.
And what else is going on in the hospital. It's been hard to gauge as well with COVID because we sort of started them around the same time.
Yep.
You know, if it was a normal situation, would our attendance be better? And I think we've also tried working around the timing when these webinars are. You know, if they're always on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock, you're going to miss some people. So we'll change it. You know, now it's on in an afternoon on a different day. Generally, I think about half the people who register show up.
That seems pretty typical, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little tricky, those sorts of things, aren't they? Like, they're important to do, but you don't want to get despondent when you sort of don't have the buy-in you think might be there. But I guess, again, you just focus on those that do turn up, don't you?
Exactly. We had a really good showing up from our research services department yesterday to our How to Use the Library webinar. So we have a research support department here, and they really weren't aware of the library, but now they are.
Oh, wow. Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, well, when they do, then, yeah, you go from there. So.
Yeah.
And do you have links to, like, nursing orientation or those sorts of things where you go out to other departments as opposed to them coming to you?
I think we did in the past, but, again, because of COVID, we've sort of pulled that back.
Yeah.
So we do have another site that's a part of our hospital network where we did have a library presence there. That had to be cut back because of COVID and spacing. And we went there just as a little pop-up library a couple of months ago,
yep,
just to show up saying, even though we're not here at this space, you can still contact us. We can still send things to you and help you out. And some people were interested in that. But I think because of where we were located, we were sort of in like a main thoroughfare. We had too many patients coming up to us.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned attending the Ergotherapy Practice Workshop. Are there other kind of professional development approaches that you have or things that you sort of do to keep on top or push yourself forwards?
I think it's just trying to get as much information as I can, putting myself out there, anything even related to health libraries, I'll try to get involved with it, such as trying to sign up for Drahila and be the sub-editor and help you out, Daniel.
Yes, other hats. So, yeah, and I'm very grateful for that for sure. So Cassandra's writing a regular feature on technology and basically comparing different tools and things like that, as well as some other tasks that we'll come across. But so is technology something you've always been interested in, like outside of library land? Or?
Yeah, I think it's just always made sense to me. Yeah.
It's a lovely way of phrasing it because it doesn't make sense to a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm just one of those people where if a program's designed the way it should be, then I can just pick it up and it works. So that's why I think I used to get really annoyed in job interviews where people would ask, oh, do you have experience with this library management system? When it should be, well, no, if you've ever used a library management system, you should know.
I absolutely agree with that. It's the principles underlying it. And
yeah,
the LMSs change anyway. And
exactly.
You know, whether it's interfaces or whole new vendors or all things like that. So. Yeah, isn't it funny, isn't it? Like why that should matter, you know?
No.
Do you have people in your life that you're the tech support for? They'll ring you up and say, I can't figure this out? Or?
My husband actually has an IT degree. So I'm lucky. So, I'm lucky I can export those people out to him. He can follow up.
Fair enough, yeah. There's one doctor in particular who'll ring me up with like Word problems or all sorts of things. So he's great and he's doing a PhD and all that, but like oftentimes I have to think my way through where he is on the screen and you know, there's sort of some of the underlying, even just, you know, Windows file manager sort of things, or what right click does, some of those sorts of things. And my dad's the same too. And they're like, they're brilliant and they know much more than me about a whole bunch of different stuff. But it's sort of some of the assumptions you kind of have to unpick a little bit. And even, and not just them too, but even with, and if you have something similar, but we have like, so mandatory training. So we've got computers in the library that quite often nurses will come to use just to do that, but they won't even have their primary logon for the computers, or, you know, having to set up their email. And so if they want to reset their password for a particular resource, that needs to go to their email. And yeah, so you end up being kind of this really basic tech support that I'm sure the people who set these systems up just assume will go because they can do it. And find that we spend a lot of time, and it's a good thing, I'm grateful for it, but I really worry if we weren't available to be that for them, you know?
I think that really helped me too, working at ANSCA. It was the first time I'd ever worked with doctors or anaesthetists, and then realising, oh no, they don't know how to turn on their computer properly, so I don't have to be intimidated by them anymore.
I know, it is interesting, isn't it? So I even, the other day I was talking to someone, and quite a senior doctor in medicine, and part of my role, I kind of help with a lecture theatre and making sure that runs. And again, these days everything requires teams and all that. And so, yeah, the number of doctors, particularly in a lecture environment where it is, you've got to be able to make sure that it works for people online, but people in the room as well, and different microphone settings, all that type of stuff. But so it is a little bit more complicated than what people are used to. But yeah, the number of really senior medical staff that sort of, the moment you put a mouse and a screen in front of them in a settings page, they kind of freak out and really unfamiliar with it. And you know, I even offered to do like a 10 basics on tech or something like that for staff. So as you say, it does take down some of those barriers. You just assume that if you spent 10 years studying medicine that you're probably brilliant at everything. And some people are, but not necessarily everybody.
Yeah, you can be good at being a doctor, I'll be good at being a librarian.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, I know, like, that's a good thing. Like, you don't have to spend all day every day doing literature searches. I can do that if you explain what you need, and I'll do my 10,000 hours on that, and you have the domain knowledge. And, you know, just like you also don't have to change beds and change dressings and things, there's, you know, staff that are skilled in that. And but I think this idea that because it might be available somewhere that everybody has to know how to do it and do it well and all of that, they just don't, and they're not going to. And so it's okay to let people who enjoy doing that do that bit of their jobs. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Are there things that you're not doing in the library in terms of its role or even professionally that you would love to kind of expand into?
We are looking at getting more into research support. Yep. So we do have a research toolkit. We offer research consultations, but I think we're all very new at it and we want, you know, more information to increase that confidence, but also know how things operate here as well, because it could be completely different to how a university operates.
I think that's a big area of growth for self-libraries moving forward.
But hopefully, like I said, the research support team came to one of our webinars so we can build up that partnership.
Do you have a sense of what the future might hold? I know it's impossible to tell, but even in terms of kind of health, and you mentioned the new hospital coming online for the heart hospital, but are there other sort of things on the horizon that you can see the library being involved in or being totally excluded from?
I would like there to be a better partnership with IT, like all librarians universally.
Yes.
So our IT team, it's quite fragmented people. It's large, of course, because we're such a big organisation. But what I would love is just to have one person I can go to and say, you can be our library liaison. This is the issue. Follow up for me in your library team. At the moment, we have to go through central support and log a ticket, and they won't know anything about our context.
And then you explain it to that person, and then the next person the next day picks up the job and you have to re-explain to them. And
yeah. They're quite ambitious for you to think next day, probably next month.
True, true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's no easy fixes to that, is there? I think IT seems such a structured way of running the departments. And I mean, we have exactly the same experience this year, although, yeah, you do sneakily sometimes get to know somebody, or maybe they might contact us if there's a fleet rollout or something like that, and you sort of, while they're there, you hammer them with other
kind of
issues you've built up. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's get annoyed sometimes because they might make changes and not tell us, like all our IP addresses changed.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And we were not informed.
Yeah. And that changes everything, doesn't it?
For exactly.
Access, authentication. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I would like to wear someone down in IT.
Probably that. The more basic level, yeah, just that organizational communication, isn't knowing what's going on in the hospital and knowing beforehand the things that might impact on we do and trying to anticipate some of those things.
Yeah, if we could plan for things, if we could, you know, collaborate on things, make it better. I do try to, if I'm in another meeting, I recently had management training for well-being within teams, and they were talking about a particular book. So I looked that book up. We had it in our catalogue. I dropped it in the chat.
Yes. I think those sort of opportunistic things are definitely the type of things that are great to, you know, build upon. And people remember those things and people take note of them. And so, I think you can't, you can spend all your time trying to build the perfect library orientation program, but sometimes, it's those opportune moments that are just as valuable.
Yeah, and I think we're trying to make a really concerted effort with our communications for it not to be this is what we have and to instead say this is how we can help you.
Yeah, right.
Because I think that's going to have more of an impact.
Library as service as opposed to library as content only.
Yeah, even when I was in a meeting recently and there was a nurse having her meeting online in the storeroom, and there was people, you know, coming in and out of the storeroom, and I told her, we have meeting rooms in the library if you want to come over here and have a quiet meeting.
That's funny. We have the opposite problem. So we have people coming to the library wanting to do a meeting, and we have a perfect room for it, which is currently being used as a storeroom.
Oh, no.
Fortunately, the people who have it as a storeroom are very slow in converting it to other things. So that's, you know, the battles you have. But but that's the type of thing that I think we're very good at responding to and saying, okay, yeah, well, obviously more people are wanting to do Teams meetings and interviews, all sorts of things. And so, you know, library as space is still important. And absolutely, we don't have, you know, rows and rows of journal content anymore, but we can convert that space into, you know, more computers, more floating offices for unattached people.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we just go ahead and do it, don't we? And
yeah. Yeah, I find it hard to sort of remember or discuss later all the changes you might have done. You know, what are some big changes you might have done when it's we just see something and we change it. We try to make it better right then, there, as it is.
Obviously, you talked about Monash being big in Melbourne and Victoria. Do you have lots of linkages with other Victorian health libraries? And hospitals are very much state-based sort of organisations, and you know, Queensland structured quite differently to Victoria. How do you see that working or not working?
We sort of have informal relationships with other libraries, and we know, you know, the health librarian. It's a small world, so we'll know people. But sure. We're also part of the Victorian Health Libraries Consortium, so we're able to make purchases on subscriptions, a bit of a reduced cost.
Anything else you'd like to share?
No. Thanks, Daniel.
I very much enjoyed the conversations.
It was good chatting with you. Thanks, Daniel.